Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C. This is Agriculture Today.
Last year, because we were still kind of dealing with the hangover of the supply chain challenges.
Kurt Blades is with the Association of Equipment Manufacturers.
We saw a lot of spring delivery of combines. That's beginning to taper off just a little bit because those supply chain challenges have sort of worked themselves out. So we did see a decline in combines for the month of March, but I think it has more to do with timing than it is demand than anything else, because last year we did see some combine sales. But in general, I'll tell you what, the combine market's really exciting. You know, first of all, that's a considered purchase. You know, it's a $500,000 plus piece of equipment, and there's new technology just abound in that industry. So you're seeing a lot of demand that's being driven by technology.
This is Agriculture Today.
The Senate Finance Committee and House Ways and Means Committee held annual hearings this week regarding the president's trade agenda. Dave Salmonson, American Farm Bureau Federation Senior Government Affairs Director, says it's an opportunity for the administration and Congress to collaborate.
This is a required report in which the administration lays out what their accomplishments have been and what they plan on doing in the upcoming year. And this year, you had the U.S. Trade Representative, Ambassador Katherine Tai, came before the committees and laid out their ideas on trade for the year. So it provides an opportunity for some real interaction between the administration and the Congress on trade and the trade agenda going forward.
Salmonson says there was bipartisan concern that the administration isn't doing enough to improve trade.
A lot of the discussion was about the fact that this administration does not pursue the traditional trade agreements. There was a lot of discussion about the fact that ag exports aren't keeping up with the volume and dollar value of ag imports, and also the lack of enforcement, especially in bringing trade cases with China. So there was an awful lot of, let us say, suggestions for improvement.
Salmonson says AFBF seeks more effort from the administration on trade.
We're not having the growth that we were used to having, going backwards some. We're not expanding our markets in a way that we want to. We need to diversify. More than half of our ag exports only go to 5 regions. We would like to sell more to a greater variety of countries, but unless we have an administration that's really willing to get in there and negotiate trade agreements and lower barriers that other countries have, we just really can't use that approach to grow our exports.
Michael Clements, Washington.
And one of the questions on the Senate side came from New Jersey Senator Bob Menendez.
Earlier today, we had a hearing in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee about the Indo-Pacific, our challenges with China. And I think that having heard a whole host of hearings and experts in this regard, there is a nearly universal consensus that as part of our meeting the China challenge, we cannot do so unless we have robust trade agreements in the Indo-Pacific. In trade agreements that ultimately mean not just to uniformity of process and certain standards, but that create market access. If, in fact, that part of our China challenge, which this Congress in a bipartisan way seems to be focused on trying to meet, access to markets is a key part of it, when will the administration get to moving in that direction?
So, Senator Menendez, I'll begin with what I wholeheartedly agree with, which is that we should have vibrant trade negotiations and trade programs with our partners, our strategic partners, and that those trade agreements should reflect our values. Now, with respect to the Indo-Pacific, I think that one of the challenges is particularly pronounced because of geography, which is that so many of the existing supply chains have links in and through China. And that for us, in order to bring an economic engagement program to the region that adds value for us and adds value for our partners, is really about supply chain diversification, as opposed to all of us through these trade agreements further entangling ourselves into existing Chinese supply chains. So I think that the key to how we do that is how do we develop programs within our trade agreements, including on tariffs, that will help us to diversify and create parallel supply chains that don't actually worsen the challenge that we all have.
But we could do that through trade agreements as well. We don't need to do it exclusive of trade agreements. All I'm saying is that without market access, you have China, an economic behemoth right next door, neighbors to all these countries. They will act in their self-interest.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
You know, July of 2023, I sent to you a bipartisan letter, bipartisan, bicameral, regarding Mexico's discriminatory policies toward American energy producers.
Wyoming Senator John Barrasso is a member of the Senate Finance Committee, where he questioned U.S. Trade Representative Catherine Tai.
We urge you to pursue full enforcement action against Mexico. Mexico's policies have violated the historic U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement. Mexico continues to favor their state-owned utility and oil and gas companies. These actions threaten more than $10 billion in U.S. energy investment. Regarding this issue, the 2024 Trade Policy Agenda report says, as of December 2023, the parties continue to consult on this matter. You're well aware of that. So what concrete steps have you taken to resolve issues with Mexico's energy policies that would protect American producers?
So we went through a period of intensive consultations and engagements with Mexico. I know the word consultation sounds polite. They can be pretty heavy-hitting conversations that we have. I think maybe the most important aspect of the work that we are doing on this right now today is with respect to our own companies. We want to make sure that steps that we take are well supported by our companies, are coordinated with them, and I think that just for purposes of this conversation, I'm happy to follow up with you as well. I'll just put the emphasis there that we remain very, very engaged with our companies around our strategy here.
I guess final question, Mr. Chairman, just so you know the timing. Why has the U.S. then not requested a dispute settlement panel with relation to this?
It is one of the options that we have, and again, it's something that we are talking to our stakeholders about.
Barrasso is a Republican from Wyoming, but a Democrat from Oregon and the chairman of the committee, Ron Wyden.
Just to wrap up, and we'll liberate you here momentarily, Ambassador, just on this question of technology policy. I showed up in the United States Senate when only one senator knew how to use a computer. That was Pat Leahy. And I decided then it was one of the areas that I wanted to go in on. And my horse was small business. Small business, and I put on this kind of prism that the big guys are going to be able to take care of themselves. My interest is small business. So I'm very glad that the White House is now working with everybody on this, the whole of government approach. And just so everybody knows, I'm going to be pushing hard that these policies like forced localization are just poison for small businesses. There's just no way they can move ahead if they're going to be paying for servers and all the rest. So we can have this discussion another time. You've been very patient. We got a lot to do. And, you know, Ambassador, I think we started close to 3 hours, you know, ago. Obviously, we feel very strongly about enforcement issues, trade barriers, and the like. This is a challenge, obviously, to strike a balance on a lot of these, you know, issues. We very much appreciate the shipbuilding 301 investigation. I get your point on how it all worked and all the rest. Let's just play more offense. Let's just play more offense. That's what you heard from the committee. After TPP, and you and I have talked about this many times, Senator Brown and I reached out to pretty much the entire Senate and said, how can we do two things? How can we be fair and protect our workers and our businesses? And how can we open markets? That's why you heard all of us, you know, talking up here. So let's find some ways to advance this kind of agenda.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Here's some common questions. What happens to those producers that rent and lease assets, heavily leveraged? What are some, by the way, what's the theme of the conference? Resiliency. What is the resiliency and agility?
Dave Cole is Professor Emeritus at Virginia Tech.
Can I give you a little perspective? We've gone from what? Ownership of assets to control of assets. So it takes this intellectual collateral to help us out. But when you have people that are controlling assets and they're leveraged, they got to be in the top 25% of production operational efficiency. That marketing risk management plan, it's not an option, it's a requirement. And you know, Jackson, you said something so important. You know what was so important? You've got a marketing plan on output, but also input. Come on with me to Pasco, Kennewick. A guy comes up to me and he says, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for what? He said, you know what? You made me over $1.5 million. How? He says, you told me to stash my cash. And he says, I was opposed to it, but I did it. And he said, you know, particularly with, you know, inflation, it doesn't earn anything in the bank. He says, you know what happened? He said, because I had cash 2 years ago, I went out and bought 5 years of diesel fuel. Yeah. And he said, you've saved me over $1.5 million. What I'm trying to tell you is that's a risk management plan on the input side. Having that working capital 3 times the debt service payments. And again, it's about margin and asset turnover. And that is the big one. You do those things 7 to 10 years, you're going to have the profit equation. Now, here are some of the questions that's frequently asked me. Can I come to ROI? It's a great ratio, but it'll get you in trouble. You know why? You can have a high ROI or ROA, or excuse me, ROI or ROE with what? High profits or low equity. And so remember what they said, and I want to reinforce what you said. You can go right from the best ROA or ROI or ROE to the worst very, very quickly. This is where your feedlots always get themselves into problems. Be really careful of that ratio.
And also talks about a large looming issue.
What keeps me up at night? It is. I'm worried about this dollar. I really am. The more we pile on debt, $30 trillion, keep it going. By the way, increase in interest rate, interest becomes the largest budget item. That's scary. And that one bothers me because agriculture will be tied to that very, very quickly.
But despite all of the challenges, he says he remains optimistic.
Do I see another 1980s? No, I don't. And why am I optimistic about agriculture? Number one, there's a set of producers that really are getting this, and they're trying to get out ahead of this curve. The second thing is these younger producers, which I think we're missing the boat a little bit. You know what the other thing is? I would just tell you, people realize the importance of agriculture and energy, but we have to carefully remind them. And one of the things is that's going to be our job out here. So I'm optimistic about the future of agriculture.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
You see projections for acreage, especially for yields and usage, as a rule, start out with the idea of being, steady, objective projections of where supply-demand forces might go.
Dan O'Brien is a Kansas State grain economist.
However, came out of the Ag Outlook Forum in February in the D.C. area, Washington, D.C., USDA projected about a $4.40 per bushel price for the coming marketing year, the one starting with the next harvest out there from September 1st on, but then got a lower corn acreage number than had been projected, ending up now at about 90.04 million acres planted. That's about 2+ million acres less than they had looked at. Their projection, of course, was 181 bushels an acre, with the highest we've ever seen so far as a U.S. yield, 177.3. So you kind of have the battle of expectations. Do you go with the trend line, theoretical yield of where you might end up at, or the highest we've been? So at least in my thinking, there's about a third chance, 33% chance that we actually get about four bushels an acre higher than we've ever had at that 181. And if we just scale back to something at which it would be a good yield, like last year, 177.3, it makes all the difference with these new acres numbers from about a 14.9 billion bushel corn crop with the lower planted acres down to about a 14.5, 14.6 ending stocks. you're still ending at, with the 177.3 billion bushel figure. You're still at right at 2 billion bushels, but it makes a difference given where we're at in these price relationships, 50, 60, 70 cents. So the USDA projected about 440 back in February. The futures markets are projecting right now about a 501 figure. By my estimates, it's more like 515. So, again, the market right now is looking at USDA numbers, 440. It looks to me with lower acres and more historically tracked yields that we're probably closer to $5. So, you know, that May 10th WASDE report will be the first time the USDA puts out its projections for supply-demand balance sheets in the WASDE reports. And my anticipation is that they'll still be at 181 bushels, will still be pretty pessimistic on things until they get more evidence. All that said, to me, the question is, do we look at a 440 low at harvest, or is it more something over $5? And there's pretty ample evidence to think that $5 is just as possible as the 440, and that's basically what the futures are saying.
But what do we need to keep in mind in a very busy time?
Almost anybody that has spring crops, they'll be doing that. I think that and a fair number of them probably still have unsold cash grain. So I think I'd have about 95% of my attention on what you have to do to make money is get the crop in, you know, and also be watching wheat too to be careful of diseases, whatever else might come in. But then at least have some price goals out there. A bell ringing on your cell phone is about what it comes down to now these days, to so that you don't get so busy that if we would start to rally for whatever ever set of reasons, that you wouldn't miss out on the ability to say, hey, I want to deliver some grain, or tell someone with trucks from an elevator to come and get it, something like that, just so that the time of busyness doesn't keep them away from the seasonal volatility that could give us some marketing opportunities.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
And I want to talk about agriculture for a moment. It is our lifeblood of our economy in Montana. And then we also realize 95% of the world's consumers live outside the United States.
Montana Senator Steve Daines questioning U.S. Trade Representative Catherine Tai at a recent Senate Finance Committee hearing.
So our farmers and ranchers know very well that the access to trade is absolutely essential to provide a future for Montana agriculture. The USTR is charged with opening markets and creating new opportunities for American producers to compete on a level playing field around the world. But frankly, as it relates to agriculture, that's not happening. I'm concerned by this administration's unambitious trade agenda and the growing decline in U.S. ag exports. I'd urge you and your team to prioritize action to reverse this very troubling trend. Ambassador Tai, in fact, in the last fiscal year, ag exports declined by more than $17 billion and are forecasted to continue to drop to a record low in the coming year. That is unacceptable. Just met with some of my ranchers this morning from Montana, and they're talking about the soaring prices, the rise in input costs. At the same time, commodity prices remaining volatile, our Montana farmers and ranchers need expanded access to these critical foreign markets just to stay afloat. The current trade deficit is unsustainable, and corrective action is necessary. My question, Ambassador, is what specific actions does the administration plan to take to reverse this widening ag trade deficit?
So, Senator Daines, I actually wanted to start by saying to you that we actually have something to celebrate, which is in my confirmation hearing, you impressed upon me how important pulse crops and the pulse crop producers are in your state. And just in the last year, we've been able to achieve improved market access for lentils and chickpeas to the Indian market, a market that's been very, very challenging for us. So that said, you know, for your state as well, we have opened up Japan for more beef by expanding that safeguard. Japan, we also have allowed for U.S. producers to capture up to 100%. That's the entirety of the Japanese ethanol market. We've just gotten Jordan to drop tariffs on eggs, Colombia for poultry, Bangladesh for cotton across the board. Our focus is to score those singles and doubles that we can do with more agility, faster, with more effective results for our farmers and producers. And again, I know that we're going to have differences of opinion, but I just want to reinforce how important our farmers are to us, from the large farmers all the way down to the small family farmers.
I've called on our presidents, both parties, Republican or Democrats, to reengage on the Trans-Pacific Partnership, to boost the American economy through fair trade with partners. I think a very strategic part of figuring out what to do about China in the Indo-Pacific. This should be a priority as China advances alternative agreements in the region now without the United States. Here's my question. Does the administration have any plan to prioritize market access agreements and enforce existing agreements in the Indo-Pacific?
The focus, I think, whether it's market access or other rules aspects of trade agreements, is how do we bring a program to our partners that will help us diversify our supply chains and make each other more resilient. And I think that that is the key question for how we develop a program that necessarily will look different from TPP, especially around those tariffs, but how important it is for us to do that.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Your proactive manager, they're going to have a plan. And matter of fact, they'll have a game plan managing all three of these. You know what the best friend of your agriculture producer is going to be? A spreadsheet.
Dr. Dave Cole is Professor Emeritus at Virginia Tech.
And a spreadsheet with various scenarios. What was I doing after I worked out this morning? It was real interesting. I was up in the room doing spreadsheets on the creamery. Matter of fact, our CFO and CEO are doing them separate, love me. And what was I doing? Shock test. Interest on operating money, 2, 3, 4% we put in. Oh, yeah. How does that influence the bottom line? And, folks, you know what you're going to say? Well, if we do that with our customer, they're just going to go to the competition. No. And, by the way, I'm going to tell you, where is a lot of your customers getting their money from? Non-traditional lenders. And this is something that you're going to have to be very, very concerned about. And you know one of the things? You don't know what you don't know, because we're taking annual financial statements. And one of the things are going to look pretty good this year, but boy, you better be careful and watch the non-traditional lender. Will they be there?
He says in times of uncertainty, know what you can control and focus on that.
Isolate your boxes. You're going to have the uncontrollables. And then you're going to have the controllables. The problem is, lenders and producers will focus more on this, because this is what gets headlines. You cannot manage the uncontrollables. You manage around them. This is where your alternative management plans are. Focus on the things that you can control. Okay?
And the last thing to remember, know where the trapdoors are.
Failure to conduct financial sensitivity analysis and margin management, taking ownership of numbers annually and monthly and quarterly. Every good business needs a Marge. Who's Marge? Let's go back to upstate New York, where I grew up, 60 miles north of Syracuse. Dairy farm, little crew cut dude. And I used to go to the John Deere dealership with my dad. And by the way, every dairy farmer in that area, who did they fear? Marge. Oh yeah, Marge Schwatt. She kept track of the accounts receivable, the parts and the supply. But guess what? Marge kept that dealership in business. In the 1980s, we had a lot of what I'd call Marges. Now, we've got Marge and Marvin. But one of the things that'll happen is a lot of your bigger companies, bigger businesses, have turned the financials over to a CFO. And the owners and managers don't know what's going on. They don't have the ownership of numbers. You know what the other thing is? Oh, they're big. We've got to require audited financial statements. Now, audited financial statements are okay, but are they using the statements in business decision making? That's the biggest crutch I've ever heard. Here's the other thing. Sorry about this. I was down in Georgia the other day doing a deal. You know what the one of the producers says? Well, the government's going to take care of us. No, farming the alphabet. And you know what another producer from Minnesota said? The government's always taking care of us. That type of mindset and attitude is not sustainable. You follow where I'm coming? Remember my theme, can you get in the black without government? That is going to be, regardless of size of business.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
In 2022, grocery store food prices went up a lot, by about 11.5%. Last year saw prices go up by a still historically large 5%. However, food shoppers could get a break this year. The Agriculture Department's new forecast for this year is for a food price hike of only 1.2%.
That would be the lowest percent change since 2019.
USDA economist Megan Schweitzer had been forecasting a 1.6% food price hike, but during March, food prices did not go up at all.
And so that is part of what's contributing to our annual forecast being adjusted down.
That, plus low inflation rates for other things that affect food prices, things like energy. And also, of course,
prices for unprocessed agricultural commodities have just begun increasing again, but they had declined for a year and a half before that. And they're still down about 20%.
Down 20% from their peak 2 years ago. Gary Crawford, Washington.